Hi everyone, it's Lucy May Walker and Friends, and today I'm joined by the lovely Kate Jones from Buskin London.
Hello.
She's a lovely lady. I just wanted to hang out with her and some excuses.
Yeah.
So I'd like to start by asking you what you do in your own words to do with Buskin London.
Gosh.
And what Buskin London is for people that have no idea.
Okay, well, let's start with what Buskin London is, because then that sort of informs what I do or don't do. Well, in fact, there's not a lot I don't do, to be honest. Buskin London is a programme that we set up 2014, mm-hmm. and it was in response to an ever-increasing number of inquiries from people wanting to know the ins and outs of going busking in London. A lot of urban myths out there, a lot of tall tales, a lot of Chinese whispers. And, you know, London is difficult because it's 32, 33 little towns all combined together, and everyone's got their own little
thing and rules.
Rules, opinions, bylaws, all this is a terribly complex thing. So we thought, right, let's put all the information into one place. Mm-hmm. Let's talk, let's bring together all the different landowners, so councils and business improvement districts, but also private landowners, right. Police, performers, equity, anyone who's got a stake in encouraging, championing and making street performance in London the best in the world.
Because it is.
Yeah. It seriously is. You know, I've gone to a lot of places around the world and I see busking and I have to put my slightly sad face on because we're so much better at it. But the idea was that you didn't have to go trawling through a council's website to find out if they had a policy on busking, because it would all be in one place. Mm-hmm. We also, which to be fair, slightly less successful, and I can tell you why, but we wanted to have a map so that when you look and go, where is the spot, mm-hmm. particularly if you're starting out, it's quite nerve-wracking to go, can I play there? Or do I have to go over there? Or is there, you know, the difference between public and private land in London is not helpfully marked out mm-hmm. with a Sharpie or a white line. And you can be 6 inches the wrong side of that invisible line and be on private land and not be allowed to busk.
I did that. Because Tim emailed me. This was the first, when I first started, and I had no idea. It was that day that I was talking about earlier. It's like, I knew where I could busk, and the one day that I was there was an event on, so I couldn't. So I was trying all these things, and again, you just kind of try it out, and then you find out that you can't do it. And I've ended up going across the bridge over to
Little St Paul's.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I found this lovely little spot, and I was like, fantastic, I've done it. And then I got an email from Tim, who also works for Busk in London, saying, just so you know, that was illegal. I was like, no!
But you see, what's interesting, the whole point was to bring all of that information together. So when you crossed over the Wibbly Wobbly Bridge,
you get to a point, so
it becomes City of London.
Yeah.
Now, busking isn't, the act of busking in the City of London is not illegal, it's the financial transaction. So, in theory, mm-hmm. you can go and perform, but you'd need a quite big sign that said, please do not give me any money, because the financial transaction is the illegal bit, you know, ancient bylaws and all sorts of stuff. So, but that's exactly it. So rather than, what we wanted to try and do was make it easier for people. You've still got to do your own research, and you've still got to work it out for yourself. But put everything in one place, have it's voluntary, it's a voluntary busker's code, but it's common sense. But often, sometimes, we all know common sense isn't always at the forefront of people's heads. You know, you're wanting to get playing, you're wanting to do your thing, rather than sort of working through a 10-point plan of how to do it and where to do it. So bringing that code together, which was written by performers and landowners and the police, putting it on the site, but also being able on that site to be able to talk about the other stuff we do, the other opportunities that we offer. And as the programme's developed, so too has the interest from the private landowners who love busking. They like the low-key vibe, they like the grassroots thing, they like the idea they're supporting up-and-coming talent. They love the idea that they don't quite know, you know, one day Lucy May Walker could be playing
if they're very lucky.
And the next, she's doing, you know, 6 months down the line, she's playing at the Brits. She's the Critics' Choice.
Like that.
might be longer than 6 months because we're just about to come up to the Brits. But people like that.
Yeah.
Because busking, you know, dare I say it, busking has become really rather sexy. And
did you
think? Yeah, it has. People start, you know, if you look at the artists who have now fessed up to doing, you know, busking in their early years.
Yeah.
And who still do it.
Yeah.
The idea that you have got an ever-changing audience,
mm-hmm.
you can build your fan base, you can try out new material. If it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. I've not paid 15 quid to come and stand there and go, yeah. well, I don't like that song, but I'm not going because I've paid 15 quid.
Yeah.
If I'm hearing something busking, you know, yeah, no, it's not for me. And you're, as a good busker, you can analyse and understand your audience, and mm-hmm. if you see people who aren't engaging, if you're just standing there and you've got no one's put anything in your case or
yeah.
tapped your eyes at all, and you've been there for an hour and a half singing the most beautiful but maybe angst-ridden songs about love and loss, and no one has stopped, it's time to change.
I feel like yeah, that is it.
No, come on. But I mean, that's an extreme example. But I mean, the idea that you can learn that craft of reading your audience
mm-hmm.
and try stuff out. If it doesn't work, it doesn't matter because you're not necessarily going to see those people again.
Yeah.
And the people who do love you will then start following you. That's the one thing that always amazes me when I see buskers who have no way of identifying themselves.
Oh, when they don't even have a name. Ridiculous.
What is that about?
Unless, I guess the only thing is, for me, busking and original music is kind of a different yeah. thing. I do busk with my original stuff, but let's say a label was going to come and see me to see if I could be on the label, whatever, consideration.
Yeah.
I would die of embarrassment if they came to a busking slot over, not die of embarrassment, I'm all right,
no.
but like over a gig with like...
Where you're showcasing your own original work and yeah. it's you in your element as opposed to battling against street noise and
yes.
a single amplifier and train announcements and everything else.
So I guess I yeah. understand maybe people want to separate the two and yeah, I guess that. But for me, like, I need to promote myself all the time.
Yeah.
So it's free promotion.
But if I heard someone doing... you know, a cheesy cover because that's what's going to get my
yep.
income.
Just
hello, it's a job.
Just
yeah,
do it.
And it's not going to influence me to go. Oh, well, that person can only do cheesy covers if they've got the most fabulous voice and
mm-hmm.
great playing skills.
Yeah.
I'm going to go. I wonder what else they can do, and then I need to know who they are so I can track them down on the internet, do a bit of internet stalking, find out all of their social and where their music is, and then you start engaging with the performer. Perhaps in their original
mm-hmm.
stuff or whatever it might be. So I can't understand why people don't have, you know, I'd be there in a
crazy
t-shirt with...
Yeah, I have done that.
Well, except what? No, what would be the issue? I think that's absolutely perfect. We get a huge number. Just this week, I've had three messages on the Busking London Facebook page.
I saw the Trafalgar Square one.
That was one, and this week someone's gone, oh, there was someone playing this particular tune at Piccadilly Circus at 2 p.m. on Monday. Who is it? I don't know.
Oh my God.
But if that person has had a sign
yeah.
or a business card, even if I've got not time to stand and wait till they finish their song,
mm-hmm.
I can chuck in some money and pick a card up and go
yeah.
and then contact them later. It's sort of doesn't make sense to me when you are... It's all about you in that instance.
Well, like... For the Jeremy Vine thing,
mm.
sorry to bang on about it.
Sorry, Jeremy, you?
Oh, Jeremy Vine,
Jez.
He would have, if I didn't have my name, there's no way that would have happened because he even forgot the name because he tweeted saying she had Walker in her name and that's all he remembered. So, you know, it's essential.
It's essential. It's absolutely essential.
You're not going to get paid on radio
too. No. You're not going to get blamed. And who'd want that anyway? I mean,
no.
really?
No big deal.
No.
So, I kind of want to ask how it all works. So, you're kind of employed, but not really. Talk about,
so,
you
okay.
know.
So, Busking London was set up and funded by
yeah.
the mayor as part of his cultural strategy, which is a very dull, but it's a strategic requirement of the Mayor of London, that he has a cultural strategy.
Which mayor set it up?
So Boris. It was a Boris initiative.
who I've sang in front of.
You have. Mm-hmm. You have indeed. Sure you. Boris, for, you know, regardless of whatever you think of him, making London the best it could be was very much on his mm-hmm. Radar. Culture is a very important part of that. He loves culture. He always said he could never play anything, but I think that's probably a, just didn't want to be, you know, put in a tricky situation.
Yeah.
A sticky situation. And so as part of that, I mean, way back when, Boris got in 2008. In 2009, he wanted a music education strategy because London was very different to it is now in terms of provision of music education, both formal and informal. So while that strategy was being written, they wanted a bit of a public-facing thing, showcase, platform, to demonstrate what great music was going on in London, mm-hmm. existing. And so I came in as a freelance person on a 30-day contract in March 2009.
Oh, my God.
I am coming up for my 10th busking birthday.
Happy birthday.
And that's where we started the busking competition with one day on London Underground, giving people the opportunity to try that out.
Yeah.
We made very shaky little handheld, films. Judging panel and us chose our top 10, the public chose number 11, we brought everyone together and had a live busk off. The winner getting a license to busk on London Underground.
Amazing.
Rarer than hen's teeth, as we know.
Do you remember who the first one
was? Yes, Jamie West.
Okay, no idea who that is. Oh, should I?
No, but look him up because his stuff is brilliant.
Cool.
He's just fantastic. And he did, we were at the O2, the mayor had a young person's question time at the Indigo.
Uh-huh.
We had our sort of live gig busk off in up the stairs, and then the winners came down and played to the at the end of the young person's question time.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was brilliant. And we did that for, 2009, 2010, 2011. The Olympics came along.
Mm-hmm.
And we went from one day on London Underground to 5 weeks, 35 different locations above ground. I mean, we kept the underground, obviously, but we went into train stations, we were in the Olympic Park, we were in the City of London. That's when we started working with Westfield. It was just everywhere because it was, people loved the idea, as I said before, of this low-key but quality, great young musicians. And at the time, there was an age restriction on it, sort of, it was 11 to 25 at that point. Once we'd come above...
11, so young.
I know, but look at some of the... Look at Natalie Shea, look at Josh Gleaves, look at Clarissa May, Josephine Shaw. It's amazing when you see them. And then the development, because you have that slightly... When you're 12 or 13, you've not got as many inhibitions as you might have when you're 17 or 18. Mm-hmm. But do enough of the playing when you're that age, and it sort of becomes ingrained, so you don't worry as much.
Yeah.
Rather than starting out at 17 or 18 and I can't look at anybody. It's just too excruciating. 2012 gave us huge visibility. I mean, it nearly killed us, but it gave us huge visibility, and people loved what it was doing, so we just kept on. And so by the time we got to 2014, we'd already done a six-month feasibility study with money from the mayor.
Yeah.
And remember, at that time, it was still Boris. Because it's such a lovely informal part of culture,
mm-hmm.
it's not all about art galleries and theatres and opera and all the rest of it. Culture is on every single high street in London and deserves to be supported in whatever form it comes along. And it's about public space, it's about engaging, bringing a bit of brightness and vibrancy to high streets, which are, mm-hmm. suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea to set up Busking London came from that. We were able to secure funding from the mayor on a 3-year basis, but with decreasing money each year. So part of it, we had to go out and raise money ourselves, whether that's through a partnership or sponsorship, or which has become, the main source of revenue, is that we work a lot with private landowners who want great music on their space. But they don't know how to go about doing it.
Yeah.
Busk in London, through our various schemes, mm-hmm. has a talent pool of the most amazing performers. But we've already done the quality checking.
Yeah.
I watch countless videos.
Yeah.
Some I never really want to see again, ever. Slightly traumatising. But what's lovely is you get this huge range of people, and it's all ages. It's all types of music. It's from all over the UK. It's not just London. I mean, we are open to anyone. And so we quality assess. We ask for public liability insurance. I remember having a conversation with someone who said, oh God, what danger is a singer with a guitar? So it's actually, sometimes it can be very dangerous. It's a very dangerous occupation. But public, no spatial awareness.
Yeah.
But you're also in very public, very busy spaces.
Yeah.
And it only takes someone, a split second for a cable to be in the way or guitar case, wherever it might be. That person trips over and sues you. That's hundreds of thousands of pounds. Mm-hmm. Why would you not pay 65 quid a year? It's like any insurance.
Yeah.
You don't want it to happen. But we do all of that. We check people's ID. We make sure that they are who they say they are. And so from a private landowner who doesn't know where to go and find great talent, who then doesn't have the time or the expertise to sort through it, make sure people are who they say they are, program people, schedule them, manage it, write information, choose the location, understand what location works better than another. So we're, they can just come to us. And yes, they have to pay us.
Yeah.
But that means that we then create opportunities for performers to either be paid, part paid, or to have the earning potential by going out and busking in the traditional sense. And often, private landowners will say, we don't want people to have to busk, we're going to pay them. You've been part a recipient of a number of those types of gigs.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a pleasure, but that's part of the job. And I will always go in to a landowner to say, well, particularly in new locations, you should be paying them in the first instance.
Yeah.
Get people, if you're in somewhere beautiful that is, steel and glass, there's lovely seating, and there's food and beverage, if you see a performer, often you'll think they're paid to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes they're not.
Yeah.
But with a private landowner who wants to invest, it's not very much money for them, considering the amount, the capital that's in their building. And they're absolutely, there are absolute economic and cultural benefits to have it that type of performance in your space.
Mm-hmm. And from a performance point of view, I love getting gigs through you guys because I know it's going to be, it might not be the best gig in the world, but I know it's going to be professional. I know that I'm going to get paid, and it's nice to have it, it's nice not being the only person that has to worry about if I don't get paid and things like that. I can go through
straight
you
to us.
And
well, we take that.
Nice. It's like a booking agency.
I suppose. It's an interesting one. I would never describe ourselves as that, but I guess we are. But we're more about. So we would never take money from the performer. So a traditional booking agency will take a cut. Mm-hmm. Not performers paid.
Right.
We don't do that. So one of the things that I do in my job is I go in and sort of do the all singing, all dancing, bring the project to life in front of a client. Property developers say, we've just done something for that. Get them to fall in love with the idea, but we're saying to them, you're paying us to access to all this pool and that we'll do all of that work. You don't have to do anything other than open the email that says, here's your schedule. Here are the people who are performing. We will sort everything else out, but we'll also take out the hassle for the performer having to invoice because you invoice us.
Yeah.
We'll pay you before we've ever been paid by the property developer or the landowner or the person who's had the party. We will always do that because we're in a better position to then, if they muck about, and I've never had anyone not pay. Maybe I'm a bit fierce in the first instance and I'm a bit scared.
So do you have regular, so when you say private, it's like, I know you've done Battersea Power Station, is that one of them?
Yep, that is.
Do you have some regular ones, Broadgate Circle?
Broadgate Circle, so land ownership in London is quite a complex thing, and there are big companies that you won't know the name of who own the land, and then there are managing agents who manage it. So Broadgate Circle is a great example. That area, right by Liverpool Street, is owned by a big land company. And they have a company called Broadgate Estates who manage it. Mm-hmm. So Broadgate Estates are in charge of making that space work, whether that's the food and beverage outlets, whether it's the office tenants. But part of their job is also to enliven the space. So Broadgate Estates will have a budget, and they will come to me and say, oh, what we'd like is this, this, and this. So I put a proposal together. I will say, right, I'm going to send you 20 performers to listen to and choose the ones you want. Some people don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. They just go with whatever I say, which is lovely and saves time. But often, in the first instance, a new person will not know the quality. So I will send, you know, my A-list.
Yeah.
I'll send my A-list and they'll come back and go, oh my God, they're all amazing. Can't choose. You do it.
Okay.
Or someone will go, yes, we want this person, this person, and this person.
Yeah.
So then...
I was going to say, how do you... how do you pick... So... I was in the Busking in London competition, that's how I know you.
Yeah.
But I didn't get to the final or anything. Nope. So how do you choose, like, do you choose the same kind of 30 people every time? No. Or
all depends on the client and what their brief is and what the space is,
mm-hmm.
and what time of year it is, and what are they trying to get out of it? Do they want it to be something that is a daytime but very bouncy? Do they want it to be evening? Do they want it to be chilled? So the brief will come from the client,
mm-hmm.
and then I will go through my sort of mental database of all the performers. And bear in mind, I've heard everybody.
That's a lot.
And I have to keep, you know, I do have to go back and sort of refresh and occasionally do some, you know, mystery shopping and go and listen to people.
That's so cool that you do that.
Well, it's good for, it's very easy to do at stations because... I obviously know a lot of people on the Network Rail scheme, you know, face-to-face personally and stuff. But I don't know everybody, so it's quite, you know, I can sort of lurk, not looking too suspicious. I always put money in people's cases, and I always, you know, flash my card.
I've never seen you.
But I know who you are.
Yeah.
Know who you are. So I will sort of go and have a listen and see what they're like. Because it's very different to listening to someone on a video, seeing them in the flesh.
Yeah.
And that, then I'm thinking, well, that person would be good for... So I'll you know, I'll stand there writing notes, or I haven't actually videoed anyone because I'm a bit useless on the phone, obviously, because being an old person. But the idea, and I'll think, oh yeah, I like that. And then they'll get, you know, if I've got a brief from a client that wants a particular type of thing, I'll have that in my head to go, they'd be great. That's
brilliant. Buskers watching this are going to be like, oh no, if I'm ever having a bad night a day.
Yeah, totally. No, I know how tough it is. As I said, I couldn't go out and do it. I know how tough it is, and I know, you know, that everyone has bad days.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has good days.
I always say that it's not me having a bad day, it's just like it's everyone else.
It's the vibe. It's the environment. It's the
they're just not getting me, and it's their problem.
But that's life. Yeah. Lots of people don't get me on a regular basis, you know.
No, really?
No, I'm just... No, not that regular, okay.
It's getting The Network Rail thing.
Yes.
Have we spoke about that? No.
No, so Network Rail is one of our private landowners.
Ah.
And so they...
I didn't look at it like that.
Yeah. So they, Network Rail, either own or manage the vast majority of stations in the UK. Some stations are managed by the train operator, so Virgin Trains, for example, will manage stations on its route.
Right.
But there's only one station in London, which is St Pancras, that's actually not owned and managed by Network Rail. That's why we don't play there. It's owned and managed by Intercontinental Railways. It's very dull. Ooh. I can ball for Britain at dinner parties on the history of Network Rail. Yay! But so they own and manage the land. They came to us, and it was for 2012, they came to us originally for the gigs busking competition to say, oh, Olympics, people are going to be queuing for 3 weeks to get home, we want some music.
Aww.
And they turned out not to be queuing for 3 weeks, but by which point we'd already ingratiated ourselves.
Yeah.
And so we did that very regularly. And Network Rail were our first private landowner to say, we want music all year round in stations.
Brilliant.
So... Yes.
So they should.
They pay busk in London.
Mm, cool.
But that means we can facilitate that application process, we can facilitate the scheduling, all the information that we have to write and provide, the endless site visits to stations to work out locations and if locations to change because of building work or operational issues or whatever it might be. So it's a big ongoing project.
Yeah.
But they were the first, and in fact, a lot of people who contact me generally start by saying, oh, I saw some busking in Waterloo.
Oh, or I saw the favourite station, yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And they're a great station to work with. They are always up for things.
Okay.
You know, the station manager just says yes, generally, before we've even asked what it is. So that's always nice. Very good to know. And we, you know, try, and obviously that scheme is open all year round. It's not like London Underground where they'll only audition every couple of years. So in fact, London Underground won't now audition. They were supposed to audition in 2019. It's now not going to be until 2020. That's 3 years. 3 years.
Wow.
So Network Red is open all the time. Yes, you have to fill in a form and send me a video link and have insurance and send me, you know, proof of who you are. Send me a quick pic of your passport and promise not to laugh at it. And we can't take everybody that applies, but that scheme is...
You shouldn't take rubbish ones.
We don't. And I know that sounds awful, but we are about showing... Part of the reason behind busking in London was to change the public perception of busking.
Yeah.
This is not about people who can't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
This is about someone using this great public stage as part of their music career and as a way to develop skills, as a way to, you know, practice their audience engagement, all the things we've talked about. Unfortunately, there is a quality threshold for any of the private landowner schemes that I run.
That's good.
And I'm quite tough.
Mm. I'm glad I've made the cut. But it's because people, like, I got someone tweeted yesterday, like, the quality of buskers in London is, like, amazing. And it's good because, well, I don't know. I quite often give money to buskers if they're really, really good. But if they're rubbish, then I'm not going to give you money just because you're a busker.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't want to encourage them.
Well, the business model, I mean, you think of it as your job. It is your job.
Yeah.
If you're not very good at your job, why should you carry on getting mm-hmm. paid and promoted?
Yeah.
It's like anything. You've got the... but busking is very democratic. If I went out busking and I wasn't very good, there's no reason why I shouldn't go out busking. My being not very good, either I'll get better
mm-hmm.
pretty quickly, otherwise I'm not going to be able to pay my rent or mortgage or whatever else. But there isn't, you know, there is the argument that says anyone can do it, but not everybody can be brilliant at it. So if your business model is I'm going to earn revenue from busking and you're not very good and you don't earn very much money,
mm-hmm.
don't necessarily stop busking, but think about something else for your income stream. Yeah.
Do that as a hobby.
But also, having very good buskers should, you know, it's like there's a very famous saying, and I can never quite remember how it goes, but it's a rising tide lifts all ships.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone around you is better, you either have to up your game
mm-hmm.
or get out.
Yeah.
So,
nice.
You know, you did. Hopefully that helped. Hopefully people do go, God, I better put some practice in. It's not just pitching out with a guitar and not being in tune and knocking out a Wonderwall. Oh, I know, don't get me started. Someone was playing that the other day and I had to physically, I was digging my nails into my palms at home to stop going, could you play something else, please?
Even if you're really good at the song, please don't ever play Wonderwall.
No.
I was going to ask, what are your best success stories from, like, artists and...
It depends on how you measure success, really, doesn't it? Because... Because we live in a generation of X Factor and Britain's Got Talent and you only have to... Exactly. You only have to get on a telly show and then you're going to be famous and you're going to make it in the music industry. Let's just look at the very, very short list of people who actually have
mm-hmm.
done that. So it's that big question of, is success for you naming lights, or is success for you making a living in the business that you want to be in, with a range of things in your portfolio that you can turn your hand to if one isn't, you know, if you want to rest from one or one isn't working for that moment, great, I'll go and do that bit of my job. So I think we have, you know, you're a prime example. You make your career as music and busking is part of that.
Most of it. 90% of it at the moment.
There you go. Yeah. And you know, something like going to Edinburgh, that is that wasn't a jolly. You were going to the Edinburgh Festival as your job. And your
Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
But the street performance bit of that is incredible. And all those performers are there as professional performers doing their job. Now, if your job is 9 to 5 sitting in an office at a keyboard
mm-hmm.
or doing paperwork, it might seem like a high old jolly to go and do 2 45-minute sets or 2 hours or whatever it might be. And that's it.
Yeah.
But it's a job. It makes no odds. People's jobs and people's lives are very different. With the busking and the street performance, I mean, you know, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival always makes me smile when I go up because it could be horizontal rain for 3 of the 4 weeks. It's Edinburgh. You know, and that's 3 weeks where people are not necessarily standing and stopping and listening. Yes, of course, lots of tourists dressed in hackamacks or whatever they are, sort of poncho type things, who don't really know what's going on, so of course they're going to stop. But tourists also don't always understand busking. Busking is quite a, yes, it happens all over the world, but it's not a global term.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, so many people, I say I'm a busker now, what's busking?
It's yeah,
like street performing, but
So it's a strange one, but I think that for me, people who, the success comes from working in the industry you want to, making a living from the industry you want to. It's not about having your name in lights. You'll probably remember this because I probably told you whatever. So we have a song prize, as you know, in the Gigs Busking competition. Part of that competition, a song prize for your own material that you can enter.
Yes.
And
did that.
Yeah,
didn't really get anywhere, but thanks.
But the idea behind that was that songwriting is a huge business.
Yeah.
If anyone asked me if I prefer to be a performer or a songwriter, so name in lights or name in brackets, I'll take the brackets any day of the
week.
Would
you? I'd take both.
Oh, some people are just so greedy. I'll take the brackets because then I can bob into Tesco and do my shopping.
Yeah.
Then oh, I might just bob down to the yacht and write my next hit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be bothered by people. You have both. You know, if you're just trying to think of someone really brilliant that would be, you know, the Taylor Swifts of this world or the Ed Sheerans of this world or the.
I'm not sure I want to be the quiet one.
No, but you.
Katie Tunstall.
So Katie's a lovely example. And she probably doesn't get bothered, but she makes a flipping good living from performing and writing.
Mm-hmm.
And extend your repertoire. You know, she plays, she loops, she does, she writes, she performs. She's great. I mean, we love Katie.
That's what I brought her up. Yeah.
We love Katie. But
what was our point?
Success. How do you measure success? And I was songwriter prize. So it was more about me saying that if you gave me the option, when I talk to songwriters.
Yeah.
Think about writing, not just for yourself. Writing for other people is big business. I've got two great friends who I'm doing some work with at the moment. One is a performer as well, an amazing performer, and one is a producer and studio engineer and writer, award-winning, both multi-platinum selling artists in their writing. And, you know, I saw them the other week, and I said, oh, who are you writing for? Well, they've just done a song, and this week, you know, this is quite comedy-inducing, but they've just written a song for Cliff Richard's new album. It's number one. They're just writing a new song for Steps.
Oh, wow.
Here's one. They're just writing, and you're like, okay, that's...
Wow. How do you even get into that, though?
By simply doing more of the writing with people, collaborating, going in and you know, looking at all the places that you can see these people find. But songwriters are quite notoriously hard to pin down because you don't know who they are.
Yeah. The good thing about the new thing on Spotify, you can put credits and you see who the song. That's great.
And then you can do your internet stalking and track them down.
But yeah, it's really hard.
Writing camps, all of that sort of thing, where you've got an opportunity to work with other people and find, you know, develop those. If you've got a particular type of writing, this particular style of writing, it's lovely, it's brilliant, but actually it might be worth knowing how to be more poppy or Americana or blues or more indie, because if you look at the briefs that come out on the various songwriting websites, the brief might be you are writing for German pop star who's got the biggest following known to mankind. If you write a hit for them, that's it. You can sit back and not have to do anything. But it might not be your particular style or genre.
Yeah.
Or your favoured style or genre. So learning how to do that, and you only do that by doing it.
Yeah. Co-writing is... I'm doing a co-write with Hattie.
Oh, fab.
Coming up.
Lovely.
I used to be terrified of co-writing. But I think that's because I'm not best at writing... anyway, like I really have to be motivated by some sort of trauma.
Generally trauma.
And I find it really hard to like, right, I'm gonna songwrite at this day from this time to this time. But when I started co-writing with the Dunwells, who I write and record with, I started co-writing with them, I was terrified. But I've written the best songs with them because, let's say like 60% of it comes from me, I've already got the thing, but then they have a way of... Co-writing makes you think of something that you would never even...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they inspire you.
Mm-hmm.
And also you might hear something and go, never have thought of doing it like that, then I'm going to take that and in my next song, it's not to have to be identikit, but it's the process and the, almost like a little template. Mm-hmm. So it's a progression, or it's a middle eight, or it's a particular hook that you want to slide in. The more co-writing you can do, the better. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fix you up with some people to co-write.
Yes. I also wanted to know, talk to me about Nile Rodgers. Aren't you best friends?
God.
How do
I can barely talk about Nile Rodgers.
No, please do.
That was extraordinary. So, International Busking Day, which is a Busk in London event and campaign, started off in 2015 as National Busking Day. And then we got various people, you know, literally tweeting and messaging us going, oh, we'll do it in, you know, wherever. We went, okay, well, we'll go global.
Yeah.
And so 2017, International Busking Day. 2018, the work that I do with Wembley Park, another of our private landowners, lovely people, wanted an International Busking Day event at Wembley. Who are we to say no? So that the idea was to bring, you know, acts from around the world, which we did do, and but with a particular focus on music. You're outside Wembley Arena, and across the way from the stadium. You know, Wembley's legacy, music legacy is huge, so let's do quite a bit on music. And we were asking various people, our Busking London ambassadors, if they could come and do a little moment just at the start. But, you know, it's midsummer. Everyone's festivaling to within each of their lives. And colleagues, June and Rachel, know Niall's manager. And it was literally a, oh, we're just, you know, well, yeah, I don't think it was even an ask. I think Julie was talking to him about something related, but, oh, and we're looking for someone to just come and do a moment. And he said, oh, no, I'll do that. And I remember getting a text from Julia, all in capital letters, with a huge number of sparkly fireworks and things, going, no, Rodgers is going to come to International Busking Day. And I'm like,
Oh my god.
No. I remember typing something deeply inappropriate back going, that can't possibly be the case. And, you know, oh, look, there's a fish on a bicycle. And then blow me.
Yeah.
But he was due just to come for like 15 minutes, do a press call and go. He was playing Lithen's Flanam Festival that evening.
Wow.
So all the way up there. Mm-hmm. He pitched up. He'd brought his guitar. He'd brought half of Chic with him, Philomi.
As you do.
And he was like, yeah, okay, I'll play. And then, so all our other artists, so people like Newton Faulkner and Key West, who we'd gathered for this picture, the sound engineer is suddenly scrabbling to get DIs and everything plugged in. And Niall's just, you know, and he went through his back catalogue. Now, the show was supposed to start at midday. You know what I'm like with a schedule?
Yeah.
I like a schedule.
Yeah, you do.
And I like to stick to it. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, you were 20 minutes early today. Trying to get the camera ready. Yeah.
But what am I going to do? Say, sorry, Niall, look, love, we can't.
It's not all about you.
No. Oh, my God. It was utterly, utterly incredible. And he was the most divine person. He was so laid back. I was having photos. He just kept playing and playing and playing. And I mean, I literally couldn't speak for quite a lot of it because sort of I was moving my mouth, but sound wasn't coming out, which you know for me is quite rare.
Yeah.
So it was just joyous.
Nice.
We did go and see him at the O2 just before Christmas.
Yeah, I think I saw that. Yeah. Was it good?
That was second row back from the front in
was
the
that
middle.
Like, did he sort that out for you?
His manager sorted that out for us. That was very rare. Very rare to get that sort of thing. But we were...
That's amazing.
Squealing for most of it.
Yeah.
Singing along, squealing. It sort of alternating because I couldn't just quite believe that he was there.
Did he see you?
Of course he did.
Yeah. Oh, that's
way
amazing.
More people in the audience. Way more interesting and famous people in the audience. But he was a legend. But then, you know, people like Ewan Faulkner, hugely supportive.
Talk to me about him because he's seen me busking.
Has he?
Yes, he saw me busking at Canary Wharf. This was probably 2 years ago. And I'm a massive fan. But like, I was a bit like you with Nile Rodgers. I was a bit like, oh my God, it's Ewan Faulkner. So, you know, Canary Wharf is, the pitch is like at the bottom of the escalator.
Yeah.
And he was like walking with, I think his son.
Yeah.
He like turned his son around to be like, oh, look at the busker. And I was like, singing this song that was like, I knew the chords, but as soon as you've seen it,
you're
like, oh, no idea.
Yeah. And what then, was this? Is this a guitar? Oh.
Oh, so dear. Embarrassed. And I just ended up...
Did you smile at him?
Oh, I did worse than that. I have a feeling he followed... No. He followed me on Twitter after this. But I shouted up to him saying, I messaged you on Twitter and you didn't reply. Because in my head, I'm like, I've got this moment. I'm never going to be in front of him again.
Elevated so pitch.
He was like kind of getting up on the escalator very quickly and then like waved. And then I was like, oh, damn it. And I think I messaged him on Twitter afterwards. And then he followed me on Twitter. So I was like, oh my God, this is great. It's going to happen. And then he just didn't reply. And then like literally the week after, he saw me again at King's Cross. So I had a quick chat, but like...
Okay.
Yeah. He's
well,
one
he
of,
started out really busking like, in Covent Garden, and he's...
Yeah,
know.
I know, he's like a... You're my man, you need to help me out, but...
well, you're on the same bill as Newton for the Apple Store gigs.
Yeah.
Newton did an Apple Store gig, mm-hmm. and in fact, he went to photo of himself in his old busking spot in Covent Garden, just for the gig. But people like that are... you know, someone he's done a huge number of different musical things, and testament to, you know, like all of you guys who do the same. I mean, he's been in a musical show,
the Green Day
show, it's called. And his, you know, his
American
Idiot. There we go. Well done. And his style has changed over the years, and his, you know, his incredible looping and all of that. So he's a really interesting artist. We like Newton a lot.
Can you get me in a co-write with him, please? He's my dream co-writer, and also to support him.
Leave it with me. Can't make any promises.
Maybe don't say who I am.
Maybe that's a good idea.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
a lovely surprise.
She shouted at me down the escalator.
It's Lucy. Here you go, Newton. Yeah, it's the mad woman. Yeah.
But then you do like. Did you see my thing about Dick and John the other day?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll take that down so the octave. Yes, sorry, that's very exciting.
That wasn't, like, so busking, this is a like fun thing, is like the amount of people that you see, or probably, because I'm not great with knowing a lot of famous people, it's probably been loads more, it's just ones that I recognise. And yet, I was at Waterloo on Wednesday, which was an accident, I wrote the wrong day down, and they let me go there anyway because the person didn't come up.
Oh, okay.
And that's not allowed, but... There you go.
Fair enough.
That happened. So I wasn't even supposed to be busking. And yeah, this guy like put money in my case, looked up, and I just went... and it was... I didn't know which one, Dick
or
Don. But I
literally...
It's
like hand or deck, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very difficult to tell which is which.
I literally like looked at him and just went, Dick and Don! Down
Lucy.
The microphone. What?
We're going to stop this Tourette's thing
no.
you're developing.
But he liked... Well, he ran away.
He ran away,
But
yeah.
then I was there again yesterday, on the day that I was supposed to be
mm-hmm.
there. And he saw me again and he waved and was like, thanks for yesterday. But he didn't stop because I wanted a photo, but I think he's a bit scared. But
yeah, we can work on that.
So something happened this week that was exciting.
Very,
what
very
was
exciting.
That?
One of our lovely buskers, Hattie Briggs, who you know, who's on our Network Rail scheme and does other gigs for me. She was busking at Paddington Station and past her went the very lovely Alfie Bow.
I don't know if I'd have recognised him.
Oh, I would.
Yeah.
I'll
say that!
Yeah, I would have done it on Lucy Bay Walker. No, I mean, I've done a couple of things with Alfie, and he's
oh, nice.
Utterly divine.
Yeah.
Loved what he saw and heard, obviously. Put some money in her case. And then found her again online, said, come on tour with me.
And not just one little opener slot.
Two solid months.
Wow.
And you finish at the Albert Hall. Not bad gig.
That's amazing.
So you never know who's...
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know yourself. You
mm-hmm.
never know who's listening or watching. There's something about the effect of live music. But not just a solist, but I mean most of the girls and guys with guitars, let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something immediately approachable and engaging about it. And that's why people love it.
Do you think, can we talk about the dangers of busking? Because on the same way that that's amazing...
Oh, there are idiots out there.
That we are so approachable that people don't know...
How not
to
approach
or
where to cross
the
line.
I'm sure you've come across a lot of those people.
I mean, I think there are, as with every walk of life, there are idiots. And there are people who assume that because you're putting yourself in that situation, you are up for anything, or you are...
We're not. Just
no, absolutely not. And, you know, I get very protective about buskers, and if I'm particularly, I know we're in 2019, but particularly female buskers, because you are in a slightly more vulnerable position than some big beefy guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just life. Yeah, it's just how it is. But the idea that someone can think that that's gives them an advantage to nick your money, come and heckle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, we've all had the Christmas drunk person wanting to come and dance, and that, I mean, can be harmless. But at the time, it's not necessarily, you don't feel like it's harmless.
Yeah.
And it happens to the boys as well. I've had calls from people saying, I don't know what to do, and they've been on the station, so that's easily sorted out. We can get the station staff, British Transport Police, etc. But it is, you know, you are in quite an exposed setting, and it just pays to be watchful, it pays to be cautious and sensible, and if you feel threatened at all, you stop, just stop.
Mm-hmm.
Stop and pack up. It pays not to leave a lot of money in your case, don't leave all your belongings scattered about, keep it all. If you're already... I know it sounds a bit dull to be neat and tidy, but neat and tidy means you can pack up and go like that.
Wow.
Ish.
Takes a while, but sure.
Rather than having
good stuff. Yeah,
exactly.
What's more important? And that's another thing someone said to me once is when people used to like try and steal the money on the underground, especially when it was like, I think when we didn't have licenses or whatever, people would be so like concerned about them taking the money that they'd leave their guitar, which is worth like way more, and they end up stealing their guitar. So I think maybe trying to assess what's most important. Cool. Do you have anything that you want to say before we wrap it up?
I just think
any advice
for
new buskers?
For new buskers, get yourself over to the Busking London website,
which is what?
www.buskinglondon.com. But on there, if you're new to it, get involved in some of our private land schemes, because that's an easy way to get the experience. So go busking, get onto the Network Rail scheme, go and do some busking in a slightly more supported setting.
Yeah, that's, yeah, really good.
Then you start, you know, you start working it out for yourself, what works, what doesn't work, then you can venture out into public. I'm not saying you don't go out onto public land, but it's tougher. It's much more tough to find the spaces. You have to queue on all of our...
Ugh, hate queuing. That is one good thing about bus when you book a slot. Oh, yeah.
You turn
fantastic.
Up and play, you go.
That's rather 4 hours a day, done.
Exactly. Rather than going standing for an hour and a half in, could be cold, could be wet, could be windy. Do I leave my key here? Yeah, well, I could do that. They're playing. So there's, you know, it's fraught with challenges before you even get to do the playing bit.
Yeah.
So get the experience working with us. As I say, we don't accept everybody, but I will always do. Or if you're really new to it, take part in our gigs busking competition.
I can recommend that. Because I knew nothing about busking until I did that. And as soon as I met other people and talked about it, I was like, oh, maybe I should give this a try. And it was the best thing I ever did.
Why wouldn't you do it?
Mm-hmm. Great. Cool.
All that information on the website.
Thanks very much. Oh, and your social media.
So we are at Busking London on Facebook, at Busking London on the Twitter.
On the Twitter, sure. Mm-hmm.
And the old Insta.
Instagram, yes.
Busking London.
Cool. Thanks very much.
Lovely.
Oh, and stay there because we need to do a picture.
Okay.
But we're done. Amazing.
Ooh.
Ooh. 9, 8, 7.
Quick.
Let me check. Oh my god. That was stressful.
It was very stressful.